asked the bull, "Oh, who are you? Are you a bull as white as a white lotus, or are you a demigod? You have lost three of your legs and are moving on only one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull?" Perfect. At least up to the time of Maharaj Parikshit, no one could imagine the wretched conditions of the cow and the bull. Maharaj Parikshit, therefore, was astonished to see such a horrible scene. He inquired whether the bull was not a demigod, assuming such a wretched condition to indicate the future of the cow and the bull. Na jatu kuravindranam dordanda padirambite bhutale nupatantyasmin vinate praninam shucha. Translation. Now for the first time, in a kingdom well protected by the arms of the kings of the Kuru dynasty, I see you grieving with tears in your eyes. Up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. Purport. The protection of the lives of both the human beings and the animals is the first and foremost duty of a government. A government must not discriminate in such principles. It is simply horrible for a pure-hearted soul to see organized animal killing by the state in this age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit was lamenting for the tears in the eyes of the bull, and he was astonished to see such an unprecedented thing in his good kingdom. Men and animals were equally protected as far as life was concerned. That is the way in God's kingdom. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Kauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyari Shatarine.
Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasani Gauravakta. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
This these texts explain to us Maharaj Parikshit's indignation, that means anger, upon seeing how Kali had smashed the bull of religion. This is truly a cause for anger. Narottam Das Thakur explains that anger must be avoided on the path of spiritual life. However, this avoidance of anger can take practical shape, if a devotee transforms that anger by using it in Krishna's service against those who are opposed to the principles of Krishna consciousness. He, however, has to be careful. It is said, hate the sin and not the sinner. In other words, if you want to transform your anger, which certainly is there, into something useful for your Krishna consciousness, you do have to learn to use it upon the ignorance which is pervading the Kali Yuga, which is directly under Kali's supervision. I was at a little while ago. It was in Beograd, seeing the video of the Shelter concert. We were there with a few Yugoslavian devotees who tend to be very emotional people, and you know, we put the video on and started do 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 do, and they went, "What is this?" And then the next thing we saw was some legs flying through the air and wild stomping and solid screaming, this was the concert. And one by one, all the devotees left the TV set until I was the only one still looking and you know, trying to listen. So I was thinking about these devotees. What is it which gives them so much energy to just do this? And I looked into their faces and I saw most of them, well, they were energetic young men. Energetic one devotees. And I saw so much anger coming out, but it was harmless, it was nice, because it was directed towards these things. Don't smoke, don't... I do not really know what they sang, but I understand that it's an accusation against the Kali Yuga principles, isn't it? The Kali Yuga life. Self-realization, not self-gratification. Many of you have these shirts on. It's certainly an extra, it's a heavy accusation, Anschuldigung, Anklage. You can see when you meet these young men, these young devotees, many are young devotees also, they are quite nice, isn't it? They are nice to deal with, nice to talk. It's not that they are angry persons. Why not? Because they go on the stage and scream out their anger against sin. Not the sinners. It works, in other words. This is a practical example how anger can be transformed in devotional service by using it on the sinful people. I suppose it's not everyone's cup of tea. That means what everyone should do or wants to do. Tattva has jokingly proposed to me that maybe we should also make a straight edge band with Gadadha as a singer. This was more like an idea in a pleasant conversation. It was not like a must that we must do this now. But see, you can, the principle here at work is use the anger against the workings of Kali, then it gets transformed. Lust can be similarly transformed by using it against by becoming lusty to hear more about Krishna. If you No, it really looks ridiculous to see so Alvin outside. We should check. I think they will. They want to hear, so let them stay. They are not bad. No, Uwe, yes, blindfold a bit, well, to fear, this also, I know we got out of. The thing is, lust can similarly be transformed by using it to hear more and more. Lust means you cannot get enough. Lust is a disease, because it can never be fulfilled. So, you can utilize this dangerous force in Krishna's service by you cannot get enough to hear about Krishna. Yes. Then you will see how lust is no longer dangerous in your spiritual life. So Narottam Das Thakur tells us how all the six enemies can be transformed by engaging oneself in Krishna's service, except for one. That is svavesti. Zavesti, yes. Zavesti means enviousness. That is the one thing which cannot be engaged in Krishna's service. It is the cause of our existence in this material world, and it is the cause of our prolongation of our existence in the material world. It is also the cause of offenses. All the 10 offenses which we have tried to remember this morning, more or less successful, come from two principles. One is enviousness and the other is false ego. Only someone who is full of this false ego and enviousness will commit offenses. However, if you are free from false ego and enviousness, offenses cannot happen in your life. It's not possible. To be, therefore, in a humble state of mind is the most important qualification in order to really execute the Yuga Dharma of chanting Hare Krishna and performing devotional service. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam, there are many instructions, and today I would like to draw your attention on the lesson, on a lesson on humility. This we will be able to be very properly fixed in Krishna consciousness, full of enthusiasm and full of love even for Krishna, if we are careful and develop humility in Krishna consciousness. Our Bhakti Lata Beach, our small beginning Krishna consciousness, is like a delicate little plant which at this moment can still be destroyed by offenses. The greatest offense, the first offense, is compared with a mad elephant offense. It's the offense against Vaishnavas. This morning we were remembering this offense, to commit an offense towards, to blaspheme those who are engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness. This offense has been compared to a mad elephant. Why? If you arrange a nice garden, then if a mad elephant comes into the garden and just runs around, throws himself in the flower beds, and so on, he will destroy all the plants which are growing inside. In a similar way, if a devotee commits offenses against other devotees, he will effectively destroy his Bhakti Lata Beach, the plant of his devotional service, and he will be nowhere in a spiritual life. These offenses, as I was saying, come basically from false ego and enviousness towards devotees. Therefore, build a wall of humility around your life. Then you are always protected against the influence of this anatta, of this offense. Humility has been compared to the natural functioning of an eye. Whenever some dirt flies into the eye, there will be water which will come out and wash the dirt out of the eye. That is if the eye is healthy. However, in an unhealthy eye, this function will not take place. So humility is that natural function of a devotee which washes out all the dirt and contamination which accumulates with his or her contact with the modes of passion and ignorance. One of these contaminations is that you want to be honored and respected for what you do and what you are, and that you become highly dependent on the results of your activities. So a natural humility will wash out those contaminations by the mode of ignorance and passion, and as a result your spiritual vision will be cleared always. But if you are an arrogant fool, then that contamination can cover your vision entirely, so that it is not possible for you to see things as they are. Sanatana Goswami has analyzed what is humility. I really would like to hear from all of you, because I think we all have thought deeply about this in our lives. What is your definition of humility as to contrast it with Sanatana Goswami's, so that we can ponder and reflect about this point. What comes to mind when you think of humility? Yeah?
To understand one's position as a servant.
Yes, Vrinda Avaneshwari?
To
appreciate devotees. These are all very good, these are good, correct answers, yes.
To have the point of view that I am totally unqualified as devotee, and that I am lower than the lowest of the devotees.
It's very difficult, isn't it? It's schwierig, oder?
Yeah.
Our Bhakta has said to understand that he is unqualified and the lowest of the Vaishnavas. Paul?
To see that it's best to do the order, to fulfill the order of the spiritual master.
To see that it is best to fulfill the order of the spiritual master, says Paul. That one does what others desire, want to do, and not always act according to his own whim. To see oneself as nothing and Krishna is everything. Well, you're at least 1.65 meters high. Is there nothing at all?
It's also to find fault in oneself and not to criticize others.
To find fault in oneself and not criticize others. These are some interesting definitions of humility. Some of you will have also others maybe ready. Well, Sanatana Goswami says, I want to read it to you. The wise man called humility that feeling which makes the most qualified person consider himself to be low and unqualified. Intelligent aspirants should follow in the footsteps of those in whose heart this humility is fixed with their words, acts, intelligence, and they should never act contrary to this. So, even if you do have qualifications, according to this definition, you will consider yourself unqualified. Is this an artificial imposition of the mind? Ist das eine künstliche Geistesverdrehung, diese Angelegenheit, dieser Gedanke? Well, no. Not really, because in spiritual knowledge one understands that he really is a tiny part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a servant, just like our Mataji has told us. That is actually self-realization, to understand who one is in one's true light. Whatever I can do with my body, words and minds is just the mercy of Krishna. I'm not really... I'm dependent on this arrangement which has been given to me by Krishna, this body and this mind, to execute my activities in this world, and therefore I'm not really the doer. See, this, in other words, this understanding is a very philosophical understanding. It is not some nonsense understanding, but it is really the true vision. We sometimes forget this because it's a philosophical, deep philosophical point taught in Shankya philosophy, that the living entity really is dependent on an arrangement of matter to work in this world, which is supplied to him by the material, by the gunas, and therefore cannot really be considered to be the doer. A humble person remembers this because he is fixed in spiritual understanding. See, humility in this world is often identified as weak-mindedness. It is actually a disqualification in this world for activity. A humble person, he's not interesting really for anyone to talk with. Because in the arena of false egos, humility is like a mosquito, you know, a disturbing thing. I see. He will be laughed at in this world. But see, this humility, as we understand it from Vaishnava scriptures, or true humility, is a sign of enlightenment, a sign also of spiritual strength, because a humble person is able to control the powerful, large, a false ego. That is something very good. So I would like to just briefly go with you through the different aspects of humility so that we can understand a little bit more about this very necessary quality. Do you understand why this humility is important? It is important because only a humble person can kirtaniya sadahari, he can actually chant the holy name of avoiding the 10 offenses against the holy name. Therefore, it is an important point to cultivate in our lives. It's not a luxury article, but a must for a serious Vaishnava. The first point Mahaprabhu makes is trinad api sunichena. One should consider himself more humble than the straw in the street. Now this has different readings or understanding. One is, if you take it in one way, it means the straw of the street, you know, after you have trampled on it, goes up again. Sometimes we, even after having been repeatedly corrected in spiritual life, we go like whoop up again. You know, the same position, isn't it, Nikata? This is sometimes happening in our lives. We cannot accept really our mistakes and whoop are back into the old position again of the sulking, proud young bhakta who feels misunderstood in the world of human beings. You know, just boop. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, more humble than the straw in the street. Another reading, you can also take it in another reading. Let me see if I can remember this. You can the grass is fodder for the cow, but I'm not even as my service attitude is not even like that. The grass at least does some service so that the end result is milk. But what have I done up to now? Nothing at all. Therefore, I must become more humble than the straw in the street. Another reading is the grass comes up again after being trampled. But when someone says something bad to me, if that someone says, "You Nitkov, you're a rascal to me," then I cannot forgive. I can never get this out of my mind. I've always offended, always his enemy. Now a fourth understanding, we go a little deep into the shloka today, is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that the grass, he says, the grass false ego is natural to its proportion. You know, it's all right. But my own false ego, due to being identified with this mind and the body, is totally unnatural. Therefore, let me become humbler than the straw in the street. So these are four understandings of this Trinada Pisunichina verse. But Bhaktisiddhanta cautions us, please don't make a false show of humility. Develop it on the strength of spiritual knowledge, not otherwise. The second line of this verse reads, Taro Iva Sahishnuna, to be more tolerant than the tree. The tree is so tolerant. It gives shadows, its shadow even to the woodcutter. Anyone can get fruits out of it. Even if you urinate on it, it will just remain, you know, forgiving, neutral. Imagine someone would do that to you. Wouldn't it be a cause of great distress and anger? Now, this means for a devotee, I mean, he should step aside if someone would come and, you know, act in an offensive way. That's not the point here. But what we should learn is to become friendly to all. This is a lesson the tree can teach us. We remember Srila Prabhupada's example in this condition. It's just a heartwarming example of Prabhupada's unlimited kindness. When he was in Los Angeles delivering the morning walks, which later became the book Life Comes from Life, a book which is rather outspoken, ziemlich deutlich wird da gegen die Wissenschaft gesprochen. I think most of you have read this book by now. And so it was during that time when the following little episode happened. There was a man who obviously felt distress. He was parking next to the park in his car. So every morning when Srila Prabhupada and his party passed, and went into the park, they saw this man looking totally dejected being parked on the entrance of the park. So one day Srila Prabhupada did not walk straight into the park, but came to the man, and he asked the man to roll down his window, which he did. Then he said a very warm-hearted good morning, and this man beamed up, you know, he smiled. He felt very nice, actually, because someone had said good morning to him. He needed a good morning, some friendliness, some sign of appreciation, and his face just lit up in the most beautiful of smiles. And that was all. Prabhupada went back to the morning, to the
to the devotees and continued with his morning walk. And next morning that meant that car was no longer there. His problem seemed to be solved. Someone had said something friendly to him. So this a devotee is really friendly towards all. And wishes good to everyone, even to his enemies. Now, this compassion without envy, actually, Prabhupada had no ill feelings. He could have said, well, this useless kami, you know, maybe he has, his wife has just kicked him out of the house, therefore he is there, you know, but this really wishing well, wishing good to others, that comes as a result of offenseless chanting. Sometimes we think, when will I ever become compassionate in my preaching activities or in my book distribution activities? We sometimes think this. Do you sometimes think like this? No? Yes. It sometimes comes. We all feel our service would be so much easier if we would feel genuine compassion, mitleid, towards people. We really would be able to approach them much more natural, and we would feel some inner urge also, an inner Drängen, to go out and do our preaching activities and Sankirtan and all our services. And we wish for that compassion to touch our stone-like hearts. It comes as a result of offenseless chanting. Like Haridas Thakur felt very much compassion for the living entities. He was beaten, for instance, on the through 24 marketplaces, and when he was still wishing well even to those who beat him. I mean, this is almost inconceivable to us. You can see here is a display of compassion without envy or ill feeling towards one. It's a sign of a very, very advanced devotee, but it will come more and more. Now the last qualification is amanina manadena. One does not expect personal honor, but is prepared to honor others. Now often a psychological feeling is, if I honor others, I intuitively hope that he will also honor me back. Isn't it? It becomes very humble. Oh, dear Krishna Das, you are certainly the best of all the Vaishnavas. And we hope that Krishna Das will say, oh dear Gauranga Das, you are also the best of the Vaishnavas. something like this, but that's of course like a counterfeit, the Fälschung von Demut, counterfeit humility. It's a more or less business. I give you this, you give me that. No, devotees should honor everyone. Now what does this really mean? How can you honor the person who is doing something wrong? Well, it is possible if you understand him to be that Krishna is inside of him. This is how we honor people. Did you know when we pay obeisances, we actually pay obeisances to the super soul? I mean, it doesn't mean we don't pay obeisances to the devotee, we also do that, but there is this element of super soul there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, it says, pranamet dandavat bhumo. One should offer prostrated obeisances, even to the horses, the outcasts, the cows and donkeys, knowing that Supreme Self dwells in them. Now, of course, special respect should go to the Guru and the Vaishnavas.
This is you know, that is especially reserved, especially that is reserved to them. Another thing is, a devotee really feels an unwillingness to receive respect. I remember this very much during this last tour. We always have a part in our during our concerts where we introduce the different Vaishnava musicians to the audience, and especially in Yugoslavia, the audience just appreciates the devotees very, very much. They go like, and here is Madana Raja. They go like, and it doesn't stop. You think, when is it going to stop? But it doesn't stop. It just continues on for a long, long time. And it feels, you know, if this happens to you, you really feel like, one feels if the respect comes in such an overdoses that something is wrong here. I mean, this is not good. You know, a little maybe all right, but but things like, but not this much. I mean. So we all do have an intuitive feeling. You can come next time on a tour and you can experience it, because they will even clap to anyone, you know. you will feel very unnatural. You want to just run away from the stage or die or something. You know, because it's dangerous for the spiritual life. So this is how one should practice, or can practice, this instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now I want to the last portion of today's presentation, I do like to tell you a little story from Krishna Lila. Now you might think this is totally unrelated to the subject. It's nice always to hear about Krishna. But what does it have to do with humility? A lot. In Chaitanya Chikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how the hearing of different leelas will remove different anattas. So there is also a leela which is recommended to hear against false pride, and I wanted to just tell the leela to you and let you go through the experience. I can imagine that it's not you won't be when you come down on that you will be totally free from false ego and pride altogether. This it might take some time, but at least when you if you should suffer from this sometimes, you can meditate about this leela and hope that you know, you will be free from this the thing. It is a leela how Krishna killed Trinavatasura. You know, the word demon. We have just seen these nice pictures. It went like this. Once, when Mother Yashoda had little Krishna, Bala Krishna, on her lap, she felt the child becoming more heavy than a mountain. You know, it was really becoming so heavy, you know, she was just breaking down, you know, not breaking, but it was just too heavy. So she just put Krishna down and felt very disturbed. She called the brahmanas to, you know, chant mantras so that Krishna would get his normal weight back. So, Sri Krishna had actually become more heavier than a mountain, because he wanted to, he knew Trinavata was coming, and he didn't want that Mother Yashoda would be too close to witness his leela of killing Trinavata Sura, because he knew his mother would be totally disturbed if she would see it. So he just, by purpose, went like, becoming heavy. And Mother Yashoda came and went to fetch the brahmanas to get the, so that they could chant mantras to relieve Krishna from his heaviness. So, at that moment, Trinavata Sura, the servant of Kamsa, came disguised as a whirlwind. And when he came, Krishna became lighter than the straw of grass. So that Trinavata Sura just went, it is described, 800 miles up with him. So there, Krishna made himself again heavy as the Sumeru mountain, and he clapped Trinavata Sura. So Trinavata Sura at first counteracted this by adopting the Mahima city. This is becoming bigger than the biggest. He became such a heavy demon, you know, just his form expanded. But Krishna's form also expanded, and because he's the Yogeshwara, actually, the master of all mystic potencies. He also took to the Mahima city. And then Trinavata Sura couldn't keep his composure any longer. And when Krishna began to choke his throat even, he fell down to the ground and was liberated. Yes, you might have sometimes asked yourselves, why it doesn't say Krishna kills the demon so and so, but why it says Krishna liberates the demon so and so. The reason is that Krishna gave them actually liberation from their material existence. Trinavata Sura entered the dark monsoon-like body of Sri Krishna, just like a lightning flash enters into a dark on the ground. The whole earth was just shaking, and you know, when he came, he saw this huge demon Krishna Dalidala playing, you know, on the chest. He was very amazed. What son I have? He's always doing such things. So, you might wonder what Trinavata Sura was in his previous life to deserve actually such a contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You would see that he was actually a very proud king. He was really puffed up. His name was Sahasraksha. He was the king of Pandudesh. And he was puffed up because he acted very religiously, giving this away, that away, this away, this away. He looked even alright for the uneducated, but everyone who was wise knew he was just, how is it, braying with his so-called religiosity. Braying, not praying. Braying means like to bray like an ass. You know, so like that. So, one day he came to the shore of the river, into a very nice place, an awesome place. yesterday our Tatva has taught me a little English. A very cool place, actually. there were nice breezes and so on. And he had 1,000 beautiful women with him. And he bathed
all together with these ladies, you know, but enjoying with them different sense gratifications. Mm. So then Durvasa Muni came by, the great yogi. And the king, who was so involved in enjoying with these thousand women at once, he was not showing the proper respect to Durvasa Muni. As a result, Durvasa became very angry and said, "Oh king, you are so puffed up, become a demon." He realized his mistake. "Oh no, why was I so... Oh Durvasa, I didn't know your extreme power. Please, please, please forgive me." Durvasa said, "No, I can't. This a curse is a curse. You have to suffer that. However, because you have showed some repentance, etwas heuer, therefore you will actually become a demon at the time Krishna appears at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, and you will meet Krishna. You will attack him, but Krishna will not take it personal. He will nevertheless liberate you." So this our pride is sometimes like Trinavata, who just went like, isn't it? So there's good reasons why we are why this lila has to be heard to us. Krishna can subdue us. So let us proud Westerners take shelter. The Krishna book is said he fell down, smashed all his limbs. There's a comparison. I have to read it again. It was a very nice comparison. I must say I can't tell you the comparison which is there in Krishna book. Very nice. So Hare Krishna, I have come to the end of our morning's class. Wanted to keep it a little brief. I do hope that you could follow all these points and can somehow be successful in applying them or applying them in your daily life in Krishna consciousness. Krishna Das Kaviraj at the end of Antya Lila explains, "Oh my dear devotees, take this verse on a string and put it around your neck." Should be all there. You know, like the Brahman string is there for those who have received that initiation. It reminds them to chant the mantra, or the danda is there for the sannyasis. It reminds them to engage their body, words and mind in Krishna service. So this is also this. He says so, Krishna Das Kaviraj, to string it on a thing, on a string, yes. Thread, yes. That we can always remember that it's there in our lives. To be more humble than the straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree, ready to respect others without expecting respect in return. This is important so that we retain or keep the proper vision in our lives in Krishna consciousness. We will not be disturbed by anything. It will be washed out like the water which washes out the dirt in our eyes. So, Hare Krishna, are there any questions regarding this subject? Yeah?
I wanted to ask for an advice because I was a little bit on Sankirtan.
Yeah.
For the first time, I mean, having this tradition. Mm-hmm. And now I find myself in the temple, and I find the life in the temple is more complex. It is more difficult to find the real, the right amount of humility, because sometimes one has also to be. I'm sure you know that in
little
himself a little bit, you know, strong and sure about one's own qualification in the, you know, inside the temple, inside the bigger room of the devotees. It is more difficult to be
humble.
Humble. For me, humility is more outside, more in this age with, in which I am
I found out in the temple life, it is essential to have a strong sadhana, otherwise one becomes untergebuddert. The correct vision of the towards the Vaishnavas is going away. And our taste also to do devotional service. Our tempers sometimes tend to be very hectic and passionate places because of the so many things which have to be done. However, we must take care that these places, that our temple life is based on a strong sadhana. For instance, in my own life in Krishna consciousness, when I return from a preaching tour through our temples, I'm just overwhelmed with devotees who want to speak to me, with problems which they put on the table, such a heap of mail, such a plastic, two plastic bags full at the present moment. And I have so much to do, telephoning, and then I also want to go out and preach to people sometimes. So much. And I personally have seen over 20 years of in devotional service that one really must chant his rounds in the morning and have some time of reading. And like around an hour, then only one is strong enough to deal with all these different things. So that is my advice, my little tip to you. Don't be overwhelmed. See, for our passionate Western mind, it is very difficult to bring these two things together, reading and thinking about Krishna, and at the same time being active for Krishna. But we have to just know about this difficulty and somehow overcome it by regular attempts. Regelmäßig muss man das versuchen. Yes. Good. Another question which comes up, which I know which is in the room, I mean, I'm not a mystic to know it. This question was written to me, so therefore I know it. What is the difference? We all, I think, agree that humility, and to maintain humility, requires spiritual strength. So the question came up the other day, what's the difference between spiritual strength and mental strength? This question is very nicely answered in the 15th chapter of the 7th canto, text number 45, for those who want to read, 7.15.45. There, Srila Prabhupada talks about achyuta bala, that is strength which comes from Krishna, or in other words, spiritual strength. He writes, the spiritual master is naturally very merciful towards his disciples, therefore, a devotee becomes spiritual strength from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, is you engage in the service of your spiritual master, the spiritual master, by the spiritual master's pleasure, if you actually please him, you will see how Krishna gives you spiritual strength. Now you might ask, how is this spiritual strength different from mental strength? They are very mentally very strong people. I understand Stalin was very strong mentally. He never took an anesthesia, eine Betäubung, even during operations, because he was fearing that the reason for not doing it was he was fearing that someone would, you know, just inject some poison into his veins and kill him. He was hated by many people. But so he managed to just, you know, keep like this, and when operations were even performed. This requires a lot of mental strength. You know how you freak out at the dentist, you know. Isn't it? No? So one could say, well, a mentally strong person can do anything. He can go on Sankirtan, he can, you know. So what is the difference between mental strength and spiritual strength? This is a question now. Now this question is very nicely answered in this text, because it says there that by spiritual strength you are able actually to conquer enemies which you cannot conquer by mental strength. The enemies are coming from the modes of ignorance and passion, and manifest in the form of attachments, enviousness towards others, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, falsches Geltungsbewusstsein, I don't know how to say this in English, offenses, fault finding, illusion, intolerance, confusion. All these things, even hunger and sleep, are overcome by spiritual strength. In other words, spiritual strength is different from mental strength, because Stalin couldn't overcome his madness, for instance, amongst other things. And the spiritual strength does come again if you engage in the service of your spiritual master according to the rules, and you are then given that spiritual strength by Krishna, actually, Achyuta Bala. Is that okay, this Geräusch, or?
It's completely new.
Sounds like a beginning of a hardcore concert. All right. So, any other points of interest for you, Vaishnava, my dear Vaishnavas, my drogi Vaishnavas? Yes, please, Bhagavad Gita.
I was wondering,
yes.
There is not so much, I have not found myself so much information about this kind of liberation that you spoke about with Trinavarta. He went in the body of Krishna.
Yes.
But I heard sometimes that it's considered for Vaishnavas even more hellish than Brahmajyoti.
Very so nice question. I can give you detailed information about Putana, who also merged in the body of Krishna, but then went from there to Gokula Vrindavan. That is the case in Putana's life. Now, I really hesitate to speculate about Trinavarta's ultimate destination. Maybe it is similar, maybe not. But in the case of Putana, this has been mentioned, that she became a nurse of Lord Krishna.
And otherwise, what actually means this?
For a Vaishnava, it means hell, because he can't serve Krishna. But someone who is not feeling like a Vaishnava, you know, to be free from birth and death, and feel all right, you know. For us, it is not enough. because we are Vaishnavas, and we, being naturally kind minded, we think everyone should have that mercy of being directly engaged in Krishna's thing. But I don't know, maybe I'm saying something controversial. I just feel if a, you know, imagine a demon going there, it's quite all right, you know.
Isn't
that nice? Yeah. Better than everything else in this world, you could say. But no, we are not for moksha. I mean, the thing is, just think of the situation, Bhakta Vatsala. He's not an ordinary person. He can't, you can't distribute a book to him, you know, or preach to him in any other way. Isn't it? He's a demon. He wants to kill everyone. You, he would also not like at all. You know? He's getting, being absorbed in the effulgence of Krishna. That's something, isn't it?
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's expresses his point of honor. He says to Arjuna, you will lose your honor if you do this. And for Acharya, it's very important to be honored. Also in Mahabharata, we see that Yudhishthira and all these great devotees, they stress this point very much. How is this connected with the principle of
humility?
Because this argument is often given that by this one will be known for many, many millions, thousands of years. So how can they consider this to be so important, the body
of something? Well, Krishna addresses Arjuna on different, not on the highest level. He speaks, for instance, in that passage, blessed are the Kshatriyas who are dying, because they, I think he speaks of the heavenly planets there, isn't it, as a result. They go to the, at least that's the understanding, that they go to the heavenly planets. He doesn't speak of